C.S. Lewis, who was a medievalist and a scholar who understood texts with an incredible depth, said of Psalm 19, where our psalm was taken from, that he thinks that this is the most beautiful poetic expression that had ever been written. It is an amazing psalm. We didn't hear the whole thing, but the psalm is so beautiful because it begins with this expression of all of creation giving glory to God. And it begins, the heavens declare the glory of God, and the firmament displays its handiwork. And so creation, by its very being, gives glory to God. The psalm then moves into the part that Angelo read for us, which is this beautiful meditation on the law of God, and how there is nothing in this world that gives to us greater meaning than the Torah. And so just as creation gives glory to God, the Torah gives glory to God. And then I'm so glad we had that last verse, because it's this beautiful prayer. Let the words of my mouth and the meditation of my heart be pleasing in your sight, O Lord, for you are my strength and my redeemer. So do you see the movement from creation to the law to you and me? That each in our own way, we are to give glory to God. And this is what the saints understood. They understood what their life was for. And when we come to this most beautiful passage from Matthew chapter 5, here we are given the insight as to how we as human beings can live our lives day by day, so that just as the Son gives glory to God, just as the Torah gives glory to God, you and I can do the same. But this is very hard for us to do. For you see, there's something in our lives. There's this mysterious curvature of the will that is called original sin. We deviate from the very actions, the very attitudes, the very reason for our being, so that we can share the life of heaven here on earth. This curvature of the will, St. Augustine described as this way. It results in us wandering in the land of unlikeness. Wandering in the land of unlikeness. We get disorientated. We don't have our bearings. We don't know where we are. Dante in the Divine Comedy begins the most amazing poem of Western civilization by describing being at the midpoint of life, being in a wood, and being lost. That is the land of unlikeness. It's a place of spiritual aridity. And what Jesus wants us to do through the Beatitudes, these are signposts along the way of life that are helping to direct us so that we do not have to live in the land of unlikeness, but that we can find our way home. But here's the thing. One of the most fundamental problems in the spiritual order is that we do sense within ourselves a hunger and a thirst for God, but we attempt to satisfy it with some created good that is less than God. St. Thomas Aquinas said that there are four typical substitutes for God. They are wealth, pleasure, power, and honor. Wealth, pleasure, power, and honor. We sense the void that is within us, and we attempt to fill it up with some combination of these four things. But it is only by emptying ourself in love that we can make space for God. Now, the classical tradition has referred to this fourfold disorder as concupiscence. One of my most favorite teachers, as many of you know, is Bishop Robert Barron. And Bishop Barron uses a different word to refer to this fourfold concupiscence. He says, in more contemporary terms, we could call these addictions. When we try to satisfy the hunger for God with something that is less than God, we're naturally frustrated, And then in our frustration, we convince ourselves that we need more of that finite good in order to satisfy us, but it never does. And we'll only struggle more and more and more. It will not only leave us dissatisfied, it will affect our families, all of our relationships in a negative way, and we will not be at peace. We will be becoming less and less integrated. We will become disintegrated. And then a kind of spiritual panic can set in, where we find ourselves turning here, there, everywhere in order to fill that hunger. And that's why it is such a blessing, isn't it, to have been here for these days, because Jesus, 2,000 years ago, gave us the answer. Those hungers can only be satisfied by him. And so what we need to do is learn a kind of spiritual perspective that allows us to realize that wealth, pleasure, power, and honor can never satisfy us. What we need to do is to cultivate the way of the Beatitudes. So let's just think about that now. Blessed are you who are poor in spirit. Or we could say, blessed are you who are not addicted to material possessions, but are learning to practice the way of detachment to material things. How free you will be to pursue God and his kingdom. And remember what Jesus also says. Blessed are the meek, for they will inherit the earth. You see, the opposite of this desire to acquire more and more and more is the way of humility, is the way of meekness. And it's interesting that Jesus then says, they're the ones who are going to inherit the earth, not the people who have lots of stuff. Blessed are you who are hungry now. Or blessed are you who are not addicted for the need of pleasure at all costs. For when you live your life centered on holiness and virtue, you can grow in the practice of self-denial and temperance. We live in a world that's addicted to pleasure. Everywhere we look, people are trying to sell pleasure, and we're trying to buy it. Pornography is all about that disordered pleasure. So many of the trinkets and the things that we think, oh, I'll just get that. That's going to please me. That's going to satisfy me. But what did Jesus say? Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness. They are the ones who will be truly satisfied. Blessed are you who weep now. Or blessed are you who are not addicted to the power of always needing to feel that you are in control. When you can let go and let God, there is an interior space that can allow for joy to take root in our hearts. So this is, you don't need to be in power. Blessed are the peacemakers, for they will be called the children of God. The opposite of that power is the desire to be people who are working towards and seeking the reconciliation of people and creation. And then finally, Jesus talks about blessed are those who are willing to be hated for the sake of righteousness. Blessed are those who don't need always to be honored, but are willing to be dishonored for the sake of Christ. And then rather than needing honor, which is this sort of preoccupation with, what are people thinking of me? We learn the way of mercy. How are we thinking of others? When people devote their lives to the pursuit of wealth, power, pleasure, and honor, they can look really good in the eyes of the world. And they can appear to be the ones who have it all together. But that's not necessarily so in terms of what is going on in the heart and in the soul. It is the saints who understand this true way, who give us a way of living that can lead us to an interior freedom and joy and purpose that when we are with others, we can fully become what we are called to become and we can enable them to do the same. I want to end by quoting the Archbishop of Constantinople, St. John Chrysostom, who lived from 349 to 407, and for the last 10 years of his life, he was the Archbishop of Constantinople. In reflecting on the Beatitudes, he wrote the following: "I have only contempt for the world's threats. I find its blessings laughable. I have no fear of poverty, no desire for wealth. I'm not afraid of death, nor do I long to live except for your good. I concentrate, therefore, on the present situation, and I urge you, my friends, to have confidence. If Christ is with me, whom shall I fear? Though the waves and the sea and the anger of princes are roused against me, they are less to me than a spider's web." How do you write that kind of stuff? I don't know yet. But I think there's something about one who's so deeply embedded in Jesus, that Jesus truly is his all. One last quote, where in a sense he's speaking to all of us now. "You are my fellow citizens, my fathers, my brothers, my sons, my sisters, my mothers, my limbs, my body. You are my light, sweeter to me than the visible light. For what can the rays of the sun bestow on me that is comparable to your love? The sun's light is useful in my earthly life, but your love is fashioning a crown for me in the life to come." That's you. Being here this week is this opportunity to be fashioning a crown for the life to come. The sun is mortal. It's finite. The sun will one day burn out. It will not always give glory to God. But those who adhere to the word, the Torah, that is not just the five books of the Old Testament, but the living Torah, Jesus Christ, they are the ones who are discovering what it means to pray, "Let the words of my mouth and the meditation of my heart be acceptable in your sight, O Lord, for you are my strength and my redeemer." We cannot do it alone. Recognize who you are, who you're becoming, and what you mean to your neighbor. And let the Son of God shine through you.